Welcome, everyone. I'm with Nancy Mellon. My name is Cynthia Fernandez, and I have a radio show called Simple Life. My husband and I have a bookstore in Carmel, California, known as the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden. And Nancy and I have been playing here with the recorder in front of us for your pleasure and enjoyment. Today, we are going to be talking about the digestive tract, which includes many organs in the body. If you're familiar with Nancy's book, Body Eloquence, The Power of Myth and Story to Awaken the Body's Energies, then you'll recognize these chapters. There's the small intestine, large intestine, the stomach, the liver, the gallbladder, the spleen and the pancreas. Yes. And so we're going to be covering on all of those aspects today in conversation and in story. And we're going to weave in some current events just to make it very grounded and practical and hopefully easy to use. So welcome, Nancy Mellon, and let's get started.
Yes, I could start with a good burp here, because here we are in the whole digestive tract of the human form divine that we all are together, and we are trying to evolve our digestive powers now in so many ways, because the digestive system is much more than just the wondrous physiology that we identify in our textbooks and in hospital lore and so forth. The digestive system weaves and interweaves very integrately with our whole feeling world, our emotions, our thinking, our thought world. It's a digestive system in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have higher digestive processes we're involved with too as human beings. And who knows, we may be food for other beings that we are not yet awake enough to be aware of. And either we're delicious or we're is a little sour, a little bitter, or whatever our particular flavor is, that as human beings that we are being tasted by other beings that are part of our great universe without our being aware of it most of the time. So the digestive mysteries are all around us and within us, and individually as well as in the great communal body that we are as human beings together.
Well, you know, it's an interesting time, Nancy. I wanted to ask you, there's been so much change going on in the world right now, and of late with, for example, our government shutdown. How are people affected by, let's say, the emotions or the overwhelm of this kind of information and experience on a digestive level?
Oh, good. Well, I think we've been suffering from indigestion for quite a long while now, with the overload of electronic information that comes not only to our politicians but into all of our households. And we're trying to adjust to this, but all evolutionary leaps and bounds and wriggles and wiggles that we've been involved with, all these evolutionary developments, they take time. Of course, there are many experiences we have where we go by the wayside in different ways, and we get digestive disorders.
So physical disorders.
Yeah, physical. We recognize them as physical disorders,
okay.
But we may not recognize that we're having digestive difficulties on other levels of our being, which are turning up also, and eventually in the stomach, in the liver, in the capacity we have to absorb and to excrete. You know that the body can hold on defensively to all kinds of things for a very long time, and then that can turn in, you know, the weight problem. Apparently, you know, we can look at our weight difficulties in this country as part of a general digestive overload, which we have not yet learned to handle and balance within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned weight on a physical level. Are there indications that people might be able to use to identify overload of, for example, thinking or emotions in terms of digestion?
Can we be more aware of these? It's interesting to to do a little exercise, because our lives these days tend to be so sedentary. So when we're sitting, we just notice what happens. The back of the body is kind of stretched out to try to find some comfort in the seat, whatever it is, the car seat or the computer chair or the... our sitting at work and at home can take up the bulk of the day. So the back of the body is kind of stretched out. The front of the body is contracted.
Mm.
And if we stand up and we just simply open up the front of the body through stretching, lifting the arms up, taking hold of a foot from behind and stretching the muscles that go all the way down the front of the body, down the front of the legs, across the knees, and down through the front of the foot and out the middle toe, that whole energy line can be so depleted that it can feel like, oh, I can't possibly do that. I can't open the front of my body. And so we get a feeling that a fullness that can come to us when we balance the front and the back of the body. And everyone in a story is going backwards into the backspace and meeting one another. In fact, it's fun to try that out. Children love to do that, where the only way that you can get to meet anybody else is through your back and through the energy in the back. And the rest of you is looking forward, but quite lonely, because the only intimacy you get is through this back space.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's the whole story in itself, is the front of the body being, well, hypercharged in the eyes, looking out at the computer screens at school and at home for long, long periods of time, and peering into that world, and the rest of the body in the front getting more and more empty, more and more depleted, and that includes the heart. That includes the liver activity. That includes the stomach, which is mainly in the front of the body, sort of more, a little more centered in the front of the body. And the whole digestive tract, which can just gradually lose steam.
The digestive issue that you spoke about in terms of, for example, weight issues, is there a storyline around emptiness trying to be filled? You know, the insatiable appetite or the intolerance of food, or the inability to take in a lot of information and actually process through it?
Well, there's so many different... These are all they're all storylines that we're living right now. I vividly remember a man who came to one of my healing story circles in the evening after a full day of work. He's a brilliant man. His wife brought him along. He was a little reluctant. On the other hand, he was curious, too, because he had young children, very hyperactive young children, and he himself marvelously hyperactive and effective in the world, but he was also voracious, and this was really getting him down. He could, no matter how much food he ate, he always felt that he should have eaten more. And same with books. He'd bring home three or four or five, a stack from the library, and he'd gnaw his way through those books after dinner and still feel unsatisfied.
Mm.
And so in the course of this play that we were doing with this playful journey with storytelling as a healing art, everyone was invited to make a story out of their pure imagination. No, and the principle I always work with is that body and soul, body and mind, are all self-healing. They're seeking to heal themselves at all times, no matter what's going on. And they can be amazingly ingenious. So our body puts us to sleep, and our soul puts us to sleep regularly so that we can have healing dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And we wake up, and most of us are not aware of what those dreams were. But storytelling can be very close to healing dreaming. So this group, they each... gave them a plot line to work with, and they made a story. And this man made a story about a man. I write about him in my book, Body Eloquence. He wrote about a man who got into a train, and he was feeling peckish. You know, he was very hungry, and so he went to the dining car, and he ordered everything on the menu. And when he had finished that, he was still hungry, and so he was surprised to hear himself saying in the story that he got up and he ate all the people on the train, and after that he ate the train. And then he got off the train, well, there wasn't any more train, so he found himself walking. He walked along, came to a hill, and he was going up the hill. It turned into a more and a more of a green hill. And when he got to the top, there was this adorable little girl coming over the lip of the hill. And his heart went out to her, and the sun was rising behind her. And he realized it was his own little daughter coming to meet him. And his heart melted. And then he finished the story, and the little girl is in his arms. And he's a perfectly happy man. And so that was the positive ending, because I always teach happy endings, positive endings with a positive charge, so that no matter what one's dealing with in one's life, which can find pictures, as in the old fairy tales, you know, terrible things can happen, but always going in the direction of greater love, justice, greater celebration of the goodness of life at the end, and the possibilities for transformation of the realm and so forth. So, to make a long story short, after he sat there astonished and puzzled at his own story, it was as if veils and veils and veils were literally palpably falling away from him. And then, out of the silence of his realization, say self-realization, He said, all the time I was growing up, my mother was always saying, eat, eat, eat. And to please her, he had tried to eat, but still he always felt she wanted him to eat more of her food. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, and then he said, you know, and my father, he was so ambitious for me. He wanted me to know everything. And so, no matter how much I learned, I always felt empty, as though I had to go and learn everything in addition to whatever I just learned. And he said, but in the midst of all that, my father's ambition and my mother's cooking, I forgot about love.
Mm.
He said, does that mean I was a little unbalanced? And his wife was very quiet while he was going through this awakening experience. And we all laughed, as you're laughing now, you know, because it was so clear, the suffering in his mind, in his insatiable mind, in his insatiable digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
And the children that he and his wife had were imitating their father in many ways, and so they really wanted the whole communal stomach of the family, after this revelation became clear, to settle down. And so they began to find some strategies for really balancing up their relationship, mm-hmm, with education and with daily food. So it wasn't this constant eating all day long and so
uh-huh,
forth.
Mm. Uh-huh. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, having to do with having the story end in a happy way. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree, there has to be some connection to hope and a positive outcome. But I also think that part of the healing process is to look at not only, you know, the good, but also the bad, the shadow in addition to the light, so that we have a balanced perspective of everything that is in our environment. And actually, personally, I feel like our journey is the dance between the light and the dark that we experience in life. And I wonder if you have anything to share with us about how this, as an example, digestion is impacted by a balanced view.
Well, you know, the stories take us into these imbalances, because when we get a good story that really shows us the shadow realm, then something in us can let go and we come more into balance. It's like you stretch out the rubber band in one direction and then you let it go and oh, there it is, and it's found its original shape again. So many of the great stories that have to do with digestion, and naturally there are a great many, because the forming and shaping and balancing of our digestive systems on all the levels are absolutely crucial to our humanity. And so the children have to develop, you know, they've got to grow their whole digestive tract. So children love to hear the stories about the little gingerbread, the different versions in different countries, the gingerbread man who doesn't want to be eaten.
Yeah, I remember that story.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be eaten, so he runs away from the old woman and the old man, and he runs and runs and runs and runs. And he's out in, you know, the freedom of his own life. But then he comes upon a creature who really would like to eat him up. And he does get eaten eventually by this clever fox. But there are other versions of that story, the energy pattern of that story, where, of course, then the child laughs. So, you laugh with fear because you're afraid of being eaten. On the other hand, you're also, oh, the fox that loves that delicious little gingerbread boy. And how many people bake those gingerbread boys and then decide which part of the little boy they're going to eat first?
That's right.
So, and that's playing with this endless problem we have, that it's eat and be eaten.
Yes.
But we don't necessarily want to think about that consciously. When children don't, but that's the drama that we're in. There are wonderful batches of stories about eating and eating and eating and eating, and then everything that goes in comes back out again.
Yes,
and
there
comes
are.
Back out even just as well as it was in the beginning. And that's a great relief too. So,
yeah.
Oh, I can be insatiable and still everything can survive. Or, you know, the great fish can eat me and then spew me out on a different shore where I'll do what I have to do. The great Jonah story, you know, that struggle that we have to relate to the tremendous appetites that surround us and that live within us, and to make sense of those so that we can actually navigate those and do what we need to do as a human being to fulfill our mission here as a human being.
You know, you mentioned earlier on about thoughts and ideas, feelings and responses as also being a part of digestion on a non-physical level. And would these stories that you just referred to apply in that regard? Or,
well, every part of us is engaged with this digestive mystery that builds us and takes nourishment, and then a certain amount of dross, you know, has to go out of every single cell within us. And that cellular activity, which we've learned how to identify and to watch through the microscopes, that activity is also taking place on the more subtle levels of our being. And it's very well recognized now in the medical world that the brain, which so resembles the intestinal tract, it's like a bunch of intestines all wrapped up in the top of the head in some ways, including the more advanced parts of the brain, that these are, sometimes they're called, the brain is actually called an outpost of the lower digestive system.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So what's going on below is also then, of course, affecting what's going on above. Vice versa, as far as our little above and below goes as individual human beings. So if we're having mental congestion, out of sympathetic resonance, that will be turning up in our lower digestive system. And if we're having digestive systems, have a very sedentary life and haven't been able to get out and walk or run or play or jump or walk the tightrope or juggle or any of these things, and instead you're just sitting day after day and then lying down in bed and getting up and sitting some more, the brain will tend to become as constipated as the lower anatomy. And brain constipation well, it turns into these very problematic fixed ideas, which are clumps of inert brain activity that just aren't going anywhere. Once we get involved with playfulness and the enjoyment of life, we get grounded down in our feet. It's so important for our stomach activity and our liver activity, and the goal as well, that we really use our feet in daily play, and like healthy children do, that they're not just laced up and captivated in a pair of shoes, which then eventually come off and one gets into bed, and then these poor, neglected, bedraggled feet are just dozing in discontent all night long and trying to rebalance themselves. So these stories are going on all the time within us.
So the connection of the feet and actual movement is a positive influence on digestion, whether it's the brain digesting thoughts and concepts or the lower extremities in our intestinal area. Is that what you mean?
Yes, and so the kinetic, there's a natural kinetic energy in the stomach, which is not surprising because it's got to be ready to go, just give it to me, I'll deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
And so it has a lot of ingenuity to it, and it's very interested in movement. It says, well, these peas are different from that string bean, and this piece of meat is going to need some real digestive juice, so I better, you know, get going here on this one. And that water is all filled with plastic, and I'm going to have to somehow deal with that. And so the stomach is always making these kinetic decisions about how to, where to toss that one, how to get that working through the liver and down through the intestines in such a way that the body can handle all this and make something out of it and poop the rest. The stories that activate this catalytic, kinesthetic deliciousness in the stomach, ingenious, tend to be very lively stories. In fact, Dr. Seuss has a huge amount of healthy stomach energy.
Does that be Green Eggs and Ham?
Yeah. How many books did he write? The kinetic energy of the stomach also just fires up when it takes hold of difficult reality. Let's deal with that. But let's deal with it in such a way that we can really digest it. We can help the children and the whole family to belly laugh, to enjoy that challenge. Be the elephant sitting on the outrageous egg, you know, the imponderable egg, and make something of it.
Yeah, eat it up.
Yeah, transform it. Yeah, transform it into something that turns into laughter and burps and the joy of movement. So there is movement in the mouth with very playful words and the love of words and the invention of new words and this movement in the larynx. These playful children's stories that are really fun to say, they are affecting the digestion. They're helping to stir these digestive juices.
So conversely then, I'm thinking back on a phrase, I'm sure you've heard it, where someone might say, I really can't stomach that. What's going on there?
Well, there, instead of the healthy stomach, being able to work with the heart and be open to what that situation is and learn to deal with it. Instead, we can shut down, and the stomach actually will shrink back and say, I can't deal with that. I can't digest that.
I can't take that in.
I don't know how to take that in yet.
Uh-huh.
And that's a story in itself. I don't know how. It's like part of the effect of the immune system working in league with the digestive system. We just can't handle all this.
So it's a protective measure.
The heart shrinks, the stomach shrinks. Many of us can eat when we're in a situation where you say, you can actually feel your stomach kind of turning more into a little fist. It shrinks down and it ties up into little knots. You can feel like all the different little muscles that are working in the stomach actually contract, and it feels like they're tying in knots, and they are actually tying in knots. Mm-hmm. And then to get those to relax again, those little knots to untie in the stomach can be a very beautiful healing sensation.
Now, I know the same can also be true throughout the small intestine, where there can actually be knots or like crimps.
Crimps in the...
Is that a holding on then of something that you don't want to either let go of or process or lose?
Yeah, it can be all of that can be going on and more in the small intestine. All of these organs, they are so sensitive to the other levels of our being. We can so easily forget that. Mm. And so, you know, working with people, often if there are digestive problems, there's usually stories, you know, there are stories that need to be told. And when those stories are told, the digestive system doesn't, the physiological digestive system doesn't have to carry them and use so much energy to carry them.
So for those of you listening, if you'd like to know more about the work that Nancy Mellon does, her website, healingstory.com, has a myriad of information. There are ongoing classes, there are books that she's written, and a lot of testimonials from people who've worked with her. And you will find more information about what we're referring to now on her website, healingstory.com. So, Nancy, is there such a thing as a communal stomach? I mean, I've heard of group consciousness. I'm kind of familiar with that one. But communal stomach?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. The whole tribe gets eaten by this beast that's lurking on the outside of the village. And one by one, they all get picked off. When the heroic young woman or man is able to conquer that beast, and the whole village can come out again, be regurgitated, you know, or find their way out, sometimes through the anus, sometimes through the mouth, sometimes cut open, and they all come out through the innards of the creature. This story appears in so many cultures. Then there's this celebration, and everybody's in the communal stomach. Everyone was in the beast stomach, and now everyone comes back into the human communal stomach, and they all celebrate and feast and dance together. And but, you know, we're all very sensitive to each other's digestive systems, and so when we do live in close proximity with others, very often in family lives, you know, the digestive patterns build up within the whole family.
And so like an inherited tendency.
Yeah, so I mean, we say, oh, this family really has digestive, has intestinal fortitude.
Uh-huh.
And they're able, all the way around, the whole family is able to deal very well with life and with the roast beef that they have every Sunday, you know, for their main meal. But other families can have a very, very, you know, different kind of digestive story. And when the communal story gets clearer, that is, if a child is carrying the communal stomach and they haven't yet found their own unique digestive system, then it's good to sort of clarify the mood of this communal stomach. And especially when young people are coming into their own at 13, 14 or so. I had the privilege of working with a mother and daughter, and the daughter had extreme bulimia, and the mother was very, very concerned about her. The three of us, the mother, the daughter, and I, we were able to find some images together. And then the mother was able to weave these into a story. And in the story, there came this reflecting pool. And when the girl in the story could go to the reflecting pool, all she saw there was a true picture of herself as an adult, a beautiful adult who was shining in her own life. the girl in the story would go sometimes very secretly to see this picture of herself. And when the mother wrote up this story, it was really quite a beautiful story. It was more complex than that, but that was the essential picture that was there, which is really a spleen picture. And you know, you come to a course and we can work with the spleen because it's a very mysterious, highly spiritual realm. But when this picture was brought into the story and the mother wrote up the story and she wrote it out by hand and she gave it to her daughter as her daughter was coming into her 16th year and gave her a gift that related to the story, which was this very beautiful mirror. Lo and behold, the girl got better. She came through her bulimia. The story that we had made together, the story gave the daughter the picture of the building of her own life and her own body, her own growing adult body, around this true picture which was secret and unique to her, that no one else knew but her, no one else could see but her. And so then the rest of her digestion could gather around that spiritual integrity and come out of all of this contraction and become much healthier.
Now, I know with some eating patterns, escapism plays a part in that. Do you find that to be true in your work with digestive issues?
Oh, goodness. One of the first and easiest places to go, in some ways seems the easiest place to go, is away from the intensity of our feeling. There's this great old Irish story, which, you know, I wish I could say the whole story now, but I won't. But it's one of the well-known old rhymed Irish story, MacConglinis, who's quite a wise man and a poet to boot, and he's invited to the realm of a kingly gourmand who is eating all the time, and there's nothing in his mind but food, all the different permutations of that, the recipes and everything. So he's always commanding and demanding more food. And so the poet begins to play with him. And in this marvelous story, he has the king agree to be tied to the chair. And then the poet, with marvelous language, brings him all these enticing meals of every sort and passes them before his nose. But because the king is so tightly tied, he's unable to actually eat them. And at the end of this marvelous story, this monstrous, voracious creature that is living inside the king can't bear it anymore, and he starts coming out of the throat of the king, trying to get to that food. He comes farther and farther and farther out, and at last the demon, he's seen in the Irish way as a demon, the demon is out, and the king is greatly relieved, and the poet has, is able then to bind the demon of this wild, uncontrolled eating. And a story like that takes us to the quick of the problem, that when we try to live in any kind of addiction, that we come under the power of these dark forces, which with the right kind of language, the right kind of love and ingenuity, can actually come out of us, be chased away.
Now, Nancy, are there personality types that are better able to take on large amounts of material and process through it more easily? Professions or personality types?
Absolutely. Some of us are made with this strength of digestive fire, where we seem to be God's gift to the human story. The ones of us who, which is not me, by the way, but but I so admire the people who can fire through large amounts of information, for example, and deal with it all. I've got a friend who's a storyteller in Ireland. She's just sent me her book, Well, she's pored through all these microfiches in the public library and in the archives of the county Leitrim, and she's found every imaginable kind of story that was hidden away, and she's brought them out and turned them into a book of the historical stories that have been told in this rather obscure part of Ireland for the last 400 or 500 years. And so she's fired into those archives, and she is just going to turn them into a delicious meal that anybody could, anyone could enjoy. And as a matter of fact, she and her mate, one of their activities has been to put on feasts, story feasts.
Mm.
And what they would do is cook up a storm for 3 or 4 days and then go to a public place and invite everybody and sing and tell stories and feast away and go on for hours and hours and hours and just be in that mood of marvelous communal digestion of the historical stories and the enjoyment of the historical stories as well as the food itself.
Well, we have a few minutes left. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with on the subject of digestion today?
Oh, good heavens, it's such a huge and wondrous world that we are all finding our way with on a daily basis. And each one of us has to do the work of digesting. Nobody else can really do it for us. We like to have somebody chew up the news for us and give it to us in a easier form. But essentially, we've got to do our own work to digest what is appropriate for us to digest and to leave the rest. And there's one of the prime stories that I love in this realm is a classic little English rhyme story about a little red hen. Do you know that story? A little red hen.
I do. It's one of my personal favorites.
Yes. And why is it such a favorite? Is because, yes.
It's a favorite of mine because so often I have encountered people who are ready to partake of the benefits when it's convenient and, you know, delicious for them, but they really oftentimes are not interested in the work that it takes to bring those benefits. Mm-hmm. And that story at a very young age sort of helped me organize that in my own mind and understand it. And also to take pride in working hard for those benefits and earning them.
They're earning those benefits.
Yeah.
They're actually planting the seed and watching the seed grow and harvesting at the right time, as a little red hen does. And she's always asking for help, but the others are quite happy to have her just
do all the work.
And they're not even observing very closely how she's doing it.
That's true.
And so in the end, when she's finally, you know, baked the bread and it's ready to eat, and she knows the whole process. And ideally, that's the stomach is involved. Our whole digestive system wants us to wake up to the whole process. The planting of the pea, the harvesting of the peas, the cooking of the peas in different ways, the receiving of the peas in gratitude and peace and wonder. The chewing of the peas, you know. And the turning of the peas into this robust, round, green energy that can bubble through us after we eat. That's a full appreciation story and a willingness to do the work. And to be really healthy in our digestion, which is so different from the fast food and kind of habits that we've developed in this country, to be really healthy in our digestion on all the different levels, it would seem that we as human beings have a lot more work to do to balance ourselves up so that we're not so famous in the world as Americans as the fattest people in the world, or whatever that may be, the overweight or the confused people that have not made sense of our nutritional world for a long time now. So I have these different groups that I work with, and recently a woman took that story and she transformed it. She made an addendum to the story, and in her version of the story, all of the creatures who had been watching her started taking an interest in what she was doing. And when the following year came around, she had the tools all lined up, and she said, "You can use this tool, and you can use that, and you can use that one, and this is how you do it, and that's how you do it." And she instructed them all, and they worked hard in her story. And she teaches young children, so this is a wonderful transformation of the story. They made furrows, and the next day everyone helped in the planting of the grains of wheat, and they all learned how to tend the plants. And one day in early summer, their beautiful field of golden wheat, it was ripe and ready for harvest. And then all together they learned the harvesting. And they learned that as they did all this work together, that they were held in this great, warm and sunny communal stomach together. And that when they finally did share the food, that it was a kind of bliss that they all experienced. Mm. And so she made a wonderful version of that. Yes. So no matter how individual our digestion can feel to us, individualized it can feel, there is a kind of illusion around that, because we are so involved with the work of others when we eat, and the great work of the earth to create this bounty of choices that we have for our food. And so all of that can turn up in stories and make us more aware, more happy, more grateful for the whole digestive process that we are involved with as human beings.
I'm grateful to have this time with you, Nancy, and I hope that all of those folks listening will benefit from this and share it with others in some small way. And if they need to get in touch with you or would like to know more about your classes or your publications, Nancy's website is healingstory.com. And she has a lot of information there. And please, take advantage of that. Thank you.
Thank you.